You are listening to Comics Reviews with Rob and Dave.
I'm following this whole, like, Joss Whedon, Zack Snyder thing.
Oh, yeah, I did see that they just wrapped up.
Well, pretty much, because we all know about what happened with Zack Snyder, family tragedy.
It's horrible.
Yeah. So, basically, after that, I mean, they were saying, like, well, they're friends, and he just asked them to be a part of it. And then, after listening to other people talk about this, then it got me thinking, yeah, possibly, because Joss Whedon was already hired for Batgirl, mm-hmm. So it's possible that WB and Zack Snyder is just like, well, you're already, you know, they're already in, he's in the fold anyway, so that's probably how they got him to do it. I'm actually hearing exec producer on all these movies, Charles Roven, was saying that he was actually helping with the post-production before the whole, thing with Zack Snyder was going on. So, I mean, it's possible. Now they're saying that they're heading back this month to England to do a lot of reshoots.
I thought the reshoots were over. I thought they just wrapped up two months of reshoots.
Well, according to Batman on Film, they're saying that they just started 2 months of reshoots.
Oh, they started. I thought they were ending.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. I heard that, too, that they had reshoots. And then everybody was going nuts. Oh, see, they didn't know what they're doing, blah, blah, blah.
That worries me that they're sending a film to reshoots this close to its release.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like still November.
So. I know it's not probably terribly uncommon, but I don't know what to think of this whole thing. But I will say, after seeing Wonder Woman, I do have a little more faith in the DC EU.
Because so that is a thumb up from Rob
they,
up.
They, it is two thumbs up. They
it's good.
Proved that they can make a kick-ass film. They know how to do it. They just haven't been doing it.
And I'll give credit where credit's due. Like, I haven't seen it yet. But I'll give credit. I have to say that, you know, the script was written in part by Zack Snyder.
Yep, Zack Snyder.
He produced it.
Alan Heinberg. Jeff Johns had his hand in the movie. And I'm going to talk spoiler-free about the movie, which is possibly going to be incredibly difficult and pretty vague, possibly, but...
Well, you can talk in spoilers and I'll just bleep everything out. Bleep. That's when Wonder Woman met bleep.
Hover your mic or hover your mouse over for this to reveal spoilers. But saw Wonder Woman last night and it was a delight. It
wasn't as good as they made it out to be.
Yes, 100%. Okay. And I was worried about. I was like, oh, there's no. Anytime I hear there's a buzz around a movie, it gets me excited. But I also think to myself, there's no way it's going to live up to that. You know, it's the energy surrounding it and the excitement that's speaking. Maybe it's not the sharp critical eye, you know, picking it apart. But I thought it was absolutely wonderful. All right, so this isn't really spoiling, but it's interesting how we start the movie off pretty much with her origin and work through it. It wasn't I didn't know how they were going to do it, if we're going to go into that right away, if they're going to kind of intersperse it, you know, in between, you know, war scenes, because the movie essentially is set during World War One, and they went through her origin in the first 20 minutes or so, 20-30 minutes, and kind of went from there. And my God, Themyscira looked absolutely gorgeous in this movie too. It was
where
just,
did they film that?
I don't know. I was wondering that. I should have looked it up, but I was just watching and I remember last night thinking, like, where did they film this? Because I want to go to there. So, but it was absolutely beautiful. Gal Gadot, I'm 100% convinced she was born to play this role. Like, she was put on this earth to make the most kick-ass Wonder Woman movie you could possibly make. Because I feel like if anyone else played the role, I was talking about this with Caroline last night. I was like, I don't think anyone else could have played this role, like, at all. It's, I don't feel like it's written for her or anything. You know, she's fairly unknown. She's kind of an unknown quantity when it comes to acting. I know she's more famous for her modeling, and not that she hasn't acted before, but to the American audience, I don't think she's a big name other than the fact that she played Wonder Woman in BVS. And from that little bit that we saw of her in that film, I thought we were in for something good. Like, I got a really good feeling about her playing Wonder Woman from her scenes in that movie. And I'd like to think that most people agreed, although it's probably not that hard, because when you have an absolute dumb fest of a movie like that, it's probably not that hard to find the, you know, like, little twinkle set in there. Like, it stands out pretty hard. But I thought she was great. I thought Chris Pine was excellent. And I think if anyone else played Wonder Woman, they would have run the risk of Chris Pine overshadowing her, overshadowing Gal Gadot. But he wasn't... Like, he's Chris Pine. He's a great actor. He's very good. But and the focus was definitely split. It's mostly on her. It's her movie. But there is a lot of focus on him too, which I think there needs to be. And because it's a lot of build up between the two, whether it be an emotional build up or sexual, I guess, or just anything, I guess. You know, you need that. Like, Wonder Woman, Steve Trevor have a history together. Wonder Woman was sexy without being sexualized. There was no cornball cheesy jokes that you would probably find in a lot of movies like that. They kind of flipped the rules a little bit too, and there was one scene, I'm not going to get into too much detail, and it was played for comedy. It was really funny, but where Chris Pine, you know, Steve Trevor sort of played the female role in these movies, how they generally portray like a sexually flirtatious scene, possibly. And it was done so tastefully and so well. I thought it was great. And never once did you feel Wonder Woman didn't have her shit together. Like, there were two younger actresses that played her in the beginning of the movie during her origin stories, and they kicked ass too. And I can only imagine children, specifically young girls, but even little boys too, just seeing a little kid on screen with that much excitement and that much energy, wanting to be a part of this life that Hippolyta, her mother, and, you know, like, the rest of the mascara is trying to keep her away from, and everything. I found myself smiling throughout most of the movie, just knowing what kind of character she is. I will say this, I don't think any other movie, except for possibly Captain America, dialed into the essence of a character as perfectly as this did. Captain America, I think, nailed it too. I think Chris Evans is Captain America from the comics. What you know about Wonder Woman, she's a fierce warrior, but she's also full of love. That's her to a T in this movie. And I love the way too that they sort of balanced her warrior side and her drive to help people and do what's right. It didn't matter what the situation called for, and she was worried about, you know, like, maybe there might have been if we don't do this now, we can get to, if we don't focus on point A, we can focus on point B, and it helps the greater good. But point A, people still might be in danger, and it's her sense of urgency is unmatched, I think, by a lot of superheroes and superhero movies and everything. And but they balance that as well as her childlike wonder and awe, you know, coming into the you know, this world that she's completely unfamiliar with. She's an adult, mm-hmm. you know, but then she, there's a scene that they pulled directly from Geoff Johns' Justice League comic, and dealing with, I don't,
slight spoiler. Was it the ice cream thing?
Yes, it was the ice cream thing, and they it was amazing. It was hysterical, but it was such a beautiful doorway into who she is as a character, like a peek into the soul of the character.
Did she lasso anybody to get them to admit that they're a cross-dresser?
They did not lift that part from Justice League.
I guess that was too much for the mainstream audience.
They did that in one of the DC animated films.
Yeah, I think that's the same one they did the ice cream, right? It was that Justice League, was it War?
War, it? Yeah.
That's the one that was essentially like the New 52 introduction, right?
Yeah, but they replaced, didn't they replace Aquaman with Shazam?
Yeah, it was odd.
Yeah. Which I get, because they wanted to do the Throne of Atlantis or whatever, but, I mean, it is what it is, but... I don't want to spoil this movie at all, because there were... I'm going to say this. There was one plot thread that I thought wasn't going to get tied up. And I'm like, okay, it kind of bothers me, but this is a really cool, you know, maybe segue into a sequel. Mm-hmm. Or maybe something that they could tie up in Justice League. Like, I'm like, alright, you know, I kind of... sort of resolved that it wasn't going to get tied up, and as soon as I thought that, they tackled it and took care of it, and I was like, wow, it kept me on my toes, you know. It wasn't, you can kind of tell where it's going, but like, you don't know where it's going at the same time, where it was very exciting and they made choices that I didn't think they were going to make.
They filmed in in several places.
They probably filmed in London, I think.
Yes, and from Wikipedia, production began November 21st, 2015, under the working title Nightingale. They filmed in London, Southern Italy, United States, and France.
I'm guessing Southern Italy is Themyscira.
Yeah, for some reason I thought it would be like Greece or something, but...
Yeah, well, that Mediterranean-ish...
Yeah, that's probably one of the
area of Europe, yeah. I thought they balanced humor really well, and I think Patty Jenkins should oversee most of these, or direct most of these movies now. I do have one gripe. I have one... Like, out of all of the things that you probably could pick apart with this movie, like, they either don't matter, or they don't bother me. There is one gripe, though, and I'm going to...
They found parking too easily in New York.
No, I'm not digging deep like that one, but... the fight scenes were half incredible and engaging and right in the moment, and then half of them kind of pushed you away, because... I don't know if you know this. I'm not really spoiling anything.
Do they do the Watchmen speed up, slow down?
And 300? Yeah, they pull a lot of Zack Snyder's tricks. Oh. But they overemphasize the slow motion, I feel like. And maybe it's because I wasn't expecting it. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know they were doing that. But... And I was like, of course, Snyder had to get... You know, they had to have that bit of Snyder in the movie, I suppose. But... I don't mind the slow motion, because you get to see the punches and the kicks and her flying through the air and the way she maybe shields herself or wields her sword. And it's the way it's done. The slow motion scenes themselves were good, but I was a fan of Watchmen and I was a fan of 300. I am fine with the fast paced slow motion scenes. Like, I know that's Snyder's trick. That's sort of his, you know, his one big party trick, but I never really minded that as his thing. I didn't love it in this movie. That being
said...
Was it
a lot desaturated, like, it took the color out of everything?
It wasn't as muted as as the Justice League trailer or the previous DC movies. I think parts of it were after Diana transitions into, you know, our world, quote unquote, during World War II. But I think that's tonally because there's, or I'm sorry, World War One, because tonally World War One is going on. So World War One is, you know, taking place during this. The movie's taking place during World War One, so tonally it makes sense for them to do that. I think I would have noticed less had that not been an issue with previous DC movies. I just thought it was a choice, because you go from this bright, beautiful world, Themyscira, to not even world, just part of Earth. But
well, they were in foggy London town.
Yes, yeah.
Which is going to be kind of dreary, too. So
it is.
This is actually a case where it kind of makes sense to dim the color.
Yeah, they made a comment about that, and it fits London, and it fits the war that's going on. So, tonally, it makes sense, where it's not just Zack Snyder putting a filter on a movie to put it on the movie, or whatever. You know, like, that's his tone in these movies. Like, it didn't quite fit that aesthetic. It served a purpose. So, yes, it was there, but it wasn't overbearing. There were other parts that kind of ran in contrast to that, too. And I think that helped.
I was hearing, I mean, I've been, you know, following it. Like, once again, I've not seen it yet, but the guys from Batman on Film, they mentioned that, I mean, they really liked it, but I think one of them did mention towards the end, the third act, which seems to be a recurring theme in this movie, is where it's like, it kind of turns into a CGI fest at the end.
Yeah,
so that could take some people out of it.
There were, it didn't take me out of it, but I did notice it. Mm. It wasn't enough to jar me away from the movie.
It wasn't like a Doomsday thing where there was like semicircles every second.
No. Or like an Arrow finale thing where an island blows up.
I'm sure we'll talk about that.
Yeah. But I could see why people might have that issue. I didn't think it wasn't enough to distract or take me out or anything. I was so engaged with what was happening that was secondary. It just didn't matter to me. So I think the flaw or flaws in this movie are so small that, you know, when it comes to reviews, you need to say something that's wrong with the movie. Like, no one wants to admit that it's perfect. Mm-hmm. This movie isn't perfect. I think I would rate it like an 8.75 to 9 out of 10.
So that's a glowing 8.75 to 9 out of 10 from Rob.
Yeah, so maybe an 8.88. Let's go with that. I'm giving it an 8.88. We're going to use stupid IGN scores. So
yeah. A big thing everybody's commenting on, which, because I just sent things to you, like, I noticed, like, in every single, like, review or article promoting it from WB, it has the Rotten Tomatoes icon. They just want to make sure, see, round the people, it got a good score this time. It's not 24.
Yeah, I don't remember them doing that during Suicide Squad.
That's what was cracking me up, you know, and you were saying that maybe it was a marketing thing, but mm-hmm. full disclosure, you know, WB owns Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. So somehow, I forgot the whole what do you call it? How it works sticks. Out exactly, yeah. But they're like a it's owned by.
Is it owned by, like, three companies or something like that?
It's the owner is Fandango Media, and in parentheses from Wikipedia, Warner Brothers Entertainment / Time Warner own 30% of it, okay. And the other 70% is owned by Comcast / NBC Universal. So, for all these people saying, like, oh, Marvel pays, blah, 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 first off, all it does is, like you said, it's an aggregator. It's just, if I review and you review and Joe down the street reviews it, it's going to show up on the site and yep. critics or whatever. So you got critics and then the public reviewing it. So it's not like there's a whole bunch of Rotten Tomato employees creating reviews, yeah.
Also, if they're going to crap all over Warner Brothers movies and that's their parent, one of their parent companies, that's just biting the hand that feeds. That wouldn't make sense, you know?
So. And it makes no sense because people are kind of dumb, but it's just, you know, it's
you could tell DC fans. Yeah.
You know, that will like, basically, DC, there's certain fans that will like anything just because it says DC or Batman on it. You know? And they're not, you know, they think Jared Leto Joker is an accurate representation. You know, like those kinds of people. You know, look at Iron Fist got lower ratings than usual for the Netflix Marvel stuff. So it just depends. It's a case by case basis. Like all those, the Tim Burton movies, the Nolan movies seem to get good scores on it, so it's not a DC thing.
Yeah.
Unless you want to get specific and say DC Extended Universe, which they gotta change that title. It sounds very obtrusive. DCEU?
It is completely obtrusive.
It sounds like PU.
There's no flow.
Yeah, and how would you... Because I notice people are... I know everybody likes to get overly excited, but people are saying, "Oh, it's dethroning the Dark Knight." How would you rank it in comparison to the pre-DC Universe movies?
I don't think it dethrones the Dark Knight. I think the Dark Knight is in its own league. I will say, I love the Dark Knight to death. I think it's one of my favorite movies, and I think it's a great representation of Batman. I don't think it's as good of a representation of a character as Wonder Woman is. Hmm. I'll say they nailed the essence of Wonder Woman better in this movie than any Batman movie has. And I think that's partly because there's so many versions of Batman to choose from.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman is more... I don't want to say one-dimensional, but she is who she is. You know, you can kind of emphasize certain aspects of her a little bit more. But she's not as malleable as Batman as a character. Like, to her core, she is a warrior, and she's about love. And that's, like, where you go from there, you can emphasize one or the other, or, you know, that's Diana at her essence. And they tuned into this, like I said earlier, better than any other movie, except for maybe, I think, the Captain America movies do. Because I really think they nail Captain America well. But I think it set a standard in the DC universe, and maybe not the extended universe, but any DC movie period, as to say, okay, not only is this the type of caliber movie we need to make, looking at the reactions from the fans so far and the critics, people are engaged and tuned in, not just because it's a female-fronted superhero movie, which I'm sure has a lot to do with it, not because it's fun and action-packed, and not because it's another superhero like summer blockbuster, but because a lot of people really connect with Wonder Woman as a character. Male, female, doesn't matter. This is a lot of people's favorite character, and they were itching for this movie. And there's a lot riding on this movie where if it was bad, I don't think people would have held back. I think there is a lot of excitement in these movies, and I get this way too, where you see it in the first week, it's like, oh, this buzz, it's really good. Like, I can promise you this movie is every... There was one scene in particular, I wish I could talk about it, it's a spoiler, but there is one scene in this movie, it's about midway through the movie, and I'm not gonna talk specifics, but it is a war scene where there's a debate going on, and then Wonder Woman decides to make a specific decision. And I remember I had chills because I was like, they nailed it right here. Like, the rest of the movie could have been garbage, but they nailed this 5-10 minutes of movie, and it connected everything so well. It pieced piece it together. So I don't, not to say that Nolan didn't tune into Batman well, I think he did. But again, there's so many versions of Batman, you know? And he chose this specific version of Batman, and I think he did it well. But it's different than the execution of Wonder Woman.
And you have to remember too, like those Nolan movies. He was doing Batman, but he had a different ambition for things. Like, he was like, let's put Batman and Blade Runner, Heat, or whatever, these other movies, these non-superhero movies. Mm-hmm. And, whereas now they're trying to go more comic booky, I think, with the stuff. But, Nolan's idea is, like, we want to make these, what he called, hyper-realistic, as, you know, that's why he didn't want a world where there was other superheroes with, like, Superman and such, and mm-hmm. he wanted as grounded as possible. I think a lot of the, in Batman Begins, I think David Goyer actually had to persuade him to have Scarecrow have a mask, because he didn't even want him to have a mask. I mean, that's how, he really wanted it to be, hyper-realistic as he could have it.
You can't really have an Amazonian woman who can jump, nearly fly through the air, be able to deflect bullets and without harm.
I wonder if that's where they got Jessica Jones from, where she doesn't really fly, but she jumps.
I don't know. I wonder if that's the case.
Which, that actually brings me to another thing. I was going to say, because you're saying it was very, close to the actual origin. I was just wondering if you noticed any, titles that you could see the influence from, from the actual comic books.
I will say they tuned in the from what I've read of Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chang's Wonder Woman. I don't want to spoil how it ties into that, but I'm going to say, the last third of the movie, it's not like, oh, they pulled panels or anything like that. It's not that. But their influence on the character was pretty apparent in the third act. So I think there was a lot of that in the movie. I think, you see a lot of, maybe George Perez and the original, the William Moulton Marsden, whatever his name is. I forget his name. But, William M. Marsden. But
it's not as catchy as, Joe Siegel or, Bob Kane. So it's, William Marshall Mathers.
So when Eminem created... but, yeah, you see those in there, but I think the third act, I think it was pretty apparent that they wanted to tune in to that New 52 version of...
William Moulton Marsden.
William Moulton Marsden. It is Moulton, I think, right?
Yes, and it also says H.G. Peter. Was it typed as on the Googles?
He might have been the artist.
Okay. But yeah, William Moulton Marsden.
Yeah, so, it definitely pulls, I think, from a lot of different eras of Wonder Woman. But I also think it's pretty apparent that they don't shy away from some of the newer influences as well.
So it's I guess Brian Azzarello, would that be New 52?
Yeah, he ran the first 36 issues of the New 52 Wonder Woman. So,
any rebirth in there?
No. Well,
good, because wasn't caring about the rebirth stuff.
It's going to be too new for that to be in there, but the way that Greg Rucka writes Diana, I will say that you definitely see that there are parallels, and not that they would lift from the movie or that the movie would lift from his book, but it just shows that they all have the understanding of the character, I guess. So I highly recommend this movie. I would love to go see it again. One thing that made me really happy, and maybe this is a little saccharine, there were a couple scenes that in the movie where Diana was making jokes. It was her back and forth with Steve Trevor, and it wasn't intent. She wasn't consciously making a joke, but it was funny to the audience kind of thing. And everyone's laughing, but that you could tell that the jokes, I don't want to say were aimed for the women, but it was like they definitely got more of a kick out of it than the men did, and all the men in the audience thought it was funny too. But it was nice hearing that. I don't see that a lot going to these movies. Not that, you know, I live in a huge major city, Chicago. I go to most of these movies opening night, and I could tell you that yes, there are a lot of women coming to these films, but it's still probably like 20% maybe. Hmm. You know, in a packed theater, 30%. This was evenly split, or maybe a little heavier on the female attendance. And I think that's great, because this movie really did tune into a demographic that's underserved. I thought it did a good job reaching out to people of that demographic with some of the jokes and everything. Like, that, everyone will find enjoyment in this film, but I think it might be the perfect movie to hook other people who, you know, maybe women that aren't necessarily like superhero fans. Not to say that the ones that show up are or aren't, but I hope that it's sort of reaching out to, like not the average superhero moviegoer, and maybe convert people to fans of these other movies and whatnot. But it was such a treat, this movie.
Well, whatever it's doing, it seems to be doing a good job, because you're already saying it's like on track to make $100 million in the first weekend, and
it did $11 million on Thursday night alone, just from the pre-showings and whatnot.
And they already said that they're going to make a sequel, so...
Oh my god, is Patty Jenkins going to direct it?
I believe so.
I hope so. Because she's done Monster, and I think she's worked on Game of Thrones... So, she's worked on, you know, this isn't her first movie, but it's her first foray into the superhero films.
Initially, she was going to be the Thor Dark World director.
That's right.
And she wanted it to be like Romeo and Juliet or something, or that's what I keep hearing.
You know what? Her version of Thor Dark World might have turned out better than what we got. And I enjoyed the movie, but...
Would there have been throwing shoes into this dimension thing?
and the intern loses his keys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't think that the Thor movies were that bad, but...
No, I like them, but I think they're probably a little lower ranking in the pantheon of Marvel movies.
Okay, this isn't... Just have an argument for the sake of argument. Which Marvel movies would you say that this is better than?
Better than?
Yeah.
Oh. Iron Man 2. The Thor movies. Hulk. I'm gonna say I liked it more than... I'm still on a buzz from Guardians 2, so I'm ranking Guardians 2 higher than Guardians 1. Mm-hmm. I think I enjoyed this more than Guardians 1. I think it's tough for me because the first Captain America movie holds a special place in my heart. But if you want to draw parallels, it's very easy to draw parallels when there are two dudes named Chris playing dudes named Steve in these movies. But as far as, you know, a period piece wartime saga, I think Wonder Woman may have pulled it off better. I mean, I wouldn't say Wonder Woman's as good as Winter Soldier and Avengers. They're different movies. It's tough because part of me doesn't want to compare to Marvel, but part of me wants to, because why shouldn't you? They're superhero movies. So I think this movie, let me just say, I think this movie could hold its own against Avengers or Winter Soldier. I don't think it's better. I think it's going to stand the test of time for me, that the rewatchability will be there.
Well, my question was kind of a shitty question. I should have probably just asked, how would you compare it to the Marvel movies?
Well, I mean...
What's it better than?
I think it's fair, though, because I think I'm a Marvel mark. I don't think I hide my love for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, there are definitely movies I enjoy more than others, but as a whole, I still feel like they haven't really let us down. Yeah. Even when things are slightly disappointing, it's still not as bad as the other side. But now the other side, mm-hmm. you know, being DC, has a real contender. This is the new litmus test for superheroes, I think. Mm-hmm. Because now you're going to have... This is the movie that's fresh in everyone's mind. So what's the next superhero movie coming out? The new Thor?
No, actually, it's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, okay. So, Spider-Man... You might not get the comparisons, maybe, from Spider-Man to Wonder Woman, just because they're so different. But I feel like if it was Thor... Looking back, it's
Thor's in November, by the way.
Yeah, it is in November, so it's Justice League, but
it's like a week before some shit.
I think Guardians 2 was great, and I told you I'm riding that buzz still.
Yeah, but I saw that last week.
Did you?
Yeah.
Would you think of it?
Maybe I wasn't in the right mood for it because it was more comic-y and stuff. It was good though. I think my favorite part was just hearing Drax laugh at everything.
Oh my god.
Just his laugh.
Drax was the movie. He, as far as I'm concerned, he stole that movie.
Drax and I think Yondu.
Yondu, oh my god. The character redemption they had for him, they really gave him a beautiful arc in that film.
Yeah, that was interesting how they brought it all around where it's like, you see that he was like a douche on the surface.
Yep.
But it's like he was like the real father for Peter.
Exactly. And the choices he made, maybe they were shitty, but they were all in favor of bettering Peter's life too. And it was a layer that you would have never even thought about that they added to it. And you see it and you're like, wow, that makes complete sense. It's not out of character. It wasn't retconning in any way. You know, it's just it. I thought it was great. I love what they did with Ego, and how they changed Peter's father from the comics. And I thought they did a great job with that. I loved the relationship between Gamora and Nebula. I liked the movie because they had a good... I think they split focus well between characters. Like, it was mostly Peter's movie because it revolved around him and his father, but there was enough going on with the other characters that...
Yeah, I mean, it was a little... You knew what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I trust my father blindly. Well, you know, it can't be as it seems. And then it's like, they kept saying
that
every 5 seconds.
There's a living planet. Yeah.
Still like Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell was great in the movie.
I kept expecting him to like smack the woman characters in the face though, like in a Hateful Eight.
Yeah. Oh, I still haven't seen that movie actually.
Yeah, you should check it out. That's one movie where I saw it in the theater. Like, I think it was on like a New Year's Eve or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And during the day and a couple of years ago. And when I saw it, I was just like, this isn't really a spoiler, but it's like none of the people are really good people. And so it was like, by the time it ended, I'm just like, wow, everybody is just terrible.
Those movies are draining.
And so it was hard for me to like, it just makes me think. I often use this Simpsons quote where it's like, at the end of the show, they're like, is this a good ending or a bad ending? And it's like, it's an ending that's good enough. And so that's kind of what it felt like, you know, with the, you know, Hateful. But I will say it, like, in the theater, I was just like, I don't know if I like this. But, like, then when I've seen it again on, like, TV, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good. Despite the appearance of Channing Tatum, which I gotta say, I've been having this has been stewing in my mind for the last couple of weeks, but Channing Tatum is like if Gronk became an actor. Am I wrong in that assessment?
I don't dislike him.
Me neither, but I just feel like
I I understand what you're saying.
Like, he's not a great actor. He's not
I think he's good enough.
But,
he's good enough. Like, I thought he was great in that movie with Steve Carell.
Foxcatcher?
Foxcatcher.
With the wrestling murderer guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's his face. That's just, like, he has kind of one of those jock kind of faces.
Well, the best... One of the best things I've ever seen online, and it was one of the only things I've ever enjoyed from BuzzFeed, was a list titled 13 Potatoes That Look Like Channing Tatum. And...
Why not 15? Why not go with a comic book and a Screen Rant and a... See, I crack up ever since you've said that, like, all their lists are 15. Every time I see the 15, I go for the ha-ha react on Facebook.
It's just, why? Why do they do that? It makes those sites unreadable now.
You just picture, like, J. Jonah Jameson, like, yelling at, like, the reporters, just being like, "Hey, you only got 14 here. What am I paying you for?" And he just, like, throws something at their face.
I can't tell you the last time I visited CBR. I don't follow them on Twitter anymore. I don't follow them on Facebook.
I tend to just read their title, the heading on Facebook, but then I just don't click on it, because what happens is my computer somehow gets AIDS after that, and there's a million pop-up ads after that.
The amount of, I don't know how that site still functions. The site was perfect the way it was. It was easy to navigate. The layout was fine. It didn't need to be anything flashy, and then they decided to make it look like a blog, and I'm not quite sure why. And then you have to scroll, and then everything loads, and blah, blah, blah. And there is a spider climbing down the ceiling right above my computer right now. What are you doing?
Maybe if it bites you, you're going to become Spider-Man.
That's very true. And then J. Jonah Jameson could yell at me after I get a job at the...
You're a fucking menace. Because I've just been reading a lot of the Spider-Man stuff lately on the Marvel app.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it's like I'm reading, like, the Ultimate Spider-Man, which is really great. Well, not the Ultimate, like, Miles Morales, but it was part of that
Peter Parker
universe. Yeah,
Well, that was what led off the Ultimate universe.
Yeah, yeah.
That was Bendis.
But I do everything backwards, so I read the Miles Morales first.
Miles Morales stuff is great, so...
Which actually reminds me, because it's like, you hear about, like, oh, Tom Hardy's going to play Venom in this Spider-Man thing, but...
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to have a Black Cat movie, but they're saying it's Sony, they're not saying Marvel. So I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Have you learned nothing?
God, I don't...
And it's not going to be connected to Spider-Man? That ain't out of their minds.
People aren't going to want to see it.
Because when I saw that, I was like, oh, he's going to play Eddie Brock or whatever. Tom Hardy's going to play Eddie Brock. I was like, yeah, that's great and everything. But if it's Sony Pictures, I don't want to see this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see the new Spider-Man if it wasn't Marvel.
I wouldn't either, because we wouldn't have had that preview of him in Civil War.
Yeah, it would have been a 37-year-old man playing some guy in high school if it was up to Sony.
They would have taken all creative control away from Sam Raimi in the third movie. Have emo Peter Parker. I'm sure Spider-Man will be good. But what else have you been reading?
I'm kind of all over the place with stuff on that because of the Marvel Unlimited. I did read that limited thing of, I think it was like Greg Rucker, Punisher, Warzone.
Okay, yeah.
That was cool, but you know.
With Marco Cicchetto.
I'll artist. Take your word for that on that, but yeah, I think I like Punisher as like a background character, or well, I guess they kind of treated it as like he's part of the thing, but he's not. You know, it was like the Avengers going up against trying to bring Punisher down.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that. Not that I dislike the character of Punisher, but I just feel like some characters they work better in an ensemble.
I would 1000% agree with that. I'm not a huge Punisher fan.
I think I like him because of Jon Bernthal.
Fair enough, yeah. Now you have a voice to, like, other than Tom Jane.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen the Punisher movies. I always heard that they were lacking. Mm-hmm. I mean, although I did hear that the one with Ray Stevenson, I think it was.
Yeah.
I heard that that was good, and I know the Lexi something or other. I know she's gone on and she's, like, done some, like, Supergirl, like, she directed an episode of some of those episodes. And like,
she's a great director.
Because she actually comes from, like, a martial arts background, too.
Yeah. And but she's also completely well-rounded in what she does, too. Like, she'll do, like, these tiny indie flicks and shit. That, I think she directed was Thomas Jane in those, in hers? I forget.
I don't think so. Lexi Alexander, that's her.
Yeah.
She's a world champion karate person.
Yeah. See, I would the spider is back again. What are you doing, buddy?
It's a sign.
But, no, I would agree that Punisher is much better in an ensemble cast. And, I don't much care for him on his own. I think he's too one-note. I think there are interesting stories, like, that I've enjoyed, but I can't dive deep into a run. Like, I've kind of flirted with the Greg Rucka stuff here and there, and I know that it's almost like he's part of a team in that run, in the main run,
mm-hmm.
because it's not just him, it's also I don't know the character's name, but where she's kind of in a similar boat, wants revenge, like her family's been wronged or murdered. And
is it that Alves something or other?
It might be. I don't remember. It's been like I remember reading the tie-in issues when they did the Omega Effect, I think, crossover with Daredevil and Spider-Man. And there was, like, another issue or two that I think I read. And then I read an issue or two of that miniseries that you were just talking about.
Yeah, she was in there. That's why that name's in my head, Alves.
From what I understand, that's the series you just read?
Punisher Warzone.
Is it Warzone? Okay, so yeah.
There's like a million things called
Warzone. There's like War Journal and everything. I've read Punisher War Journal in the past too. But Warzone, from what I understand, I remember everyone complaining because they're like, oh, it's a miniseries, but this should have just been the end to Greg Rucka's run because it is essentially a continuation of his run. So if you like that, you might want to check out his main Punisher series.
Yeah, I don't know. But I still think that this series will be good. With Punisher, the Netflix.
Netflix, okay, yeah. And that comes out later this year.
I will make a bold prediction. I predict it will be the best Marvel Netflix series.
That is bold.
Yeah. I'll probably be wrong, but, you know, it's Saturday, so it's a day for bold predictions.
No day like Saturday. Bold predictions.
I'm in the bold prediction mood.
I would love that. Just because I know how you feel about Iron Fist. But while I didn't hate Iron Fist, I really want something great following that again. And not just Defenders, because that I'm sure that'll be awesome. But a single character television show. To get me, not that I've lost excitement or anything, because I haven't. I trust Marvel and Netflix, but I want to get that. I want to feel that energy again.
Well, that Punisher, that's in November, they said recently.
Yeah. Yep.
And so that's going to be the third Netflix series for Marvel this year, because we had Iron Fist, and then in August I believe it's going to be Defenders, and then November Punisher.
And November is busy because it's Punisher on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's Justice League and Thor in the theaters. And
you know when, you know the dates are? Thor is November 3rd, Justice League is November 17th.
Really?
So that's pretty crazy.
It's weird, because normally you don't, I mean, Marvel always has November releases. It's interesting to see DC go that route, too.
Mm, probably because they have this universe now, so they're just like, whenever, you know, they have available time. Because I know it's weird to see, because I know it's not
it's not a Batman movie. It kind of is, but it's like I always think of Batman movies as a summer thing, June, July. So it's weird to have it in November.
True, true. But I guess they really wanted. I mean, that spot was for Wonder Woman. I think they would have.
Was that what it was? It was going to be in November.
No. I'm saying like the summery spot was for Wonder Woman.
Oh, okay.
Because I think they like had they reversed the two, I think they would have possibly hindered Wonder Woman's success.
Nah, it makes sense.
I think a lot of it is because it's summertime, and people are clamoring for that summer action movie. I think most of it is because it's a great movie, Wonder Woman. But I think a lot of it is timing too.
I think you have to have like Wonder Woman in the sun. Yeah, I think if it's one of those characters, like, I mean, I don't know when Aquaman's gonna be, but you would think that would be in a summer movie.
You would hope so. I don't want to say fringe because they're main characters, but when it comes to the DC EU, you know, they're lesser characters than a Batman or a Superman.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say with Wonder Woman and especially Aquaman, you're at an advantage because these are, like you said before, we've seen Batman a lot on the silver screen. So we saw Wonder Woman, there was a TV series, but there was no movie, and it's not as ingrained in our minds as Batman and I'd say Superman are. So there's very little to, not to minimize any accomplishments, but there's, you're not as expecting as much.
No, you're hoping for it.
You don't have to compare
it
to anything.
Exactly. You're not expecting as much because of all everything that you just said. But, you know, like, there's not much to compare to except for other movies that didn't do so well. Like, maybe, or not monetarily, but didn't do so well maybe in the eyes of fans or whatever. But that being said, and to kind of go back to what I said about Wonder Woman and Aquaman, and not to say that they're fringe characters because they're not, and they're just not as major players as Superman and Batman. Let me amend that statement a little bit, because Wonder Woman, you know, is part of the Trinity, but this movie firmly plants her in the in that Trinity in. You know, the DCEU, as far as that's concerned. And it solidifies her as a major player in these films, so.
Well, I just mean because, you know, it's, like, comic book people know Wonder Woman, but it's not as, you know, now probably it would be more popular than that. Whereas, like, I mean, then maybe that speaks to the whole thing of Marvel's success, because it's like a lot of these characters, you know, Iron Man, the popular audience, they don't know about Iron Man, or Doctor Strange, or Ant-Man, so.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
That's a deep cut right there, man.
Yeah, and I was just bringing it back to Wonder Woman. I was going to say, did you, because I heard there was a Zack Snyder cameo.
You said that.
Did you catch it?
And I thought you were joking. And I was like, I don't know if he's joking or not. So I was looking for it, and I didn't see it. I'm sure he's, I don't know. Do you know who he played?
He was this evil character trying to ruin the DC universe.
So he appeared as himself?
Yes. Nah.
Back in World War I?
Yeah, just kidding. But,
No, I didn't catch him. I kept an eye out for him, but
maybe he wasn't in the forefront. He was just like,
yeah, it could have just blended in.
Yeah.
Well, that's also like when Ed Brubaker was in Winter Soldier, and I missed it the first time I saw it. I was like, wait,
oh, yeah, he's the guy that gave the drugs or whatever.
Yeah, he didn't have any lines or anything. He was like holding him down.
Post credit scenes?
None. That I knew. So I knew going into it. Everyone confirmed it. And so after the main, you know, beginning of the credits where they just credit the main characters first before the actual credits start rolling, we stayed for that just because the artwork was pretty cool and I wanted to take a look at that. But once the actual credits started rolling, I left.
Also, did any other DC characters show up in the movie?
As far as villains or heroes or anything like that?
Yeah,
or,
sure.
Or just, I mean,
either or.
Oh, Real quick, before I answer that question, one thing I didn't touch upon earlier when giving my main review is Etta Candy was amazing. Whoever the actress is that played her, she was so awesome. And
no
I would
relation
watch...
to John Candy.
No. And I would watch the hell out of an Etta Candy movie. So, that being said, no, it was, I mean, nothing outside of Wonder Woman lore, like, that I could tell. There was no, like, dark side or anything like that.
There's no, like, Wonder Woman, like, sending an email to Bruce Wayne or anything like that?
Maybe.
Okay.
That literally starts off the movie. that's the first minute of the movie. But it sort of sandwiches things. I guess...
I'll say this. This isn't a spoiler because it's literally how the movie starts. But Bruce Wayne sends an original picture of her and Steve Trevor and a few other characters that you come to meet in the movie. And he says, "I found the original picture. Now can you tell me your story?" And she smiles.
Oh, interesting.
She smiles. She thinks about it. And then it dives into the story. And then they revisit that scene at the end, so it, like, sandwiches the entire movie. But,
nice.
Yeah, it is. And there's a truck, a Wayne Industries truck, that delivers that to her at the Louvre. And the license plate says, like, JL something, 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 something. So
JL, you know, Avengers.
A little nod to Justice League, but...
Nice. I like it. Now I'm happy now knowing that, because I was listening to Holy Badcast, I think, and he was talking about, they were asking if, like, Bruce Wayne was in the movie or whatever, and they're like, oh, I thought, but he was trying to be coy or whatever, but I knew he's gonna be part of it, because they mentioned it, like, 2 years ago that he's gonna have some cameo type deal.
Well, he wasn't in it. I'll say that much. So don't.
Okay.
Yeah, like he wasn't in it, but like
the connection was there.
The connection was there. Like it was
That's
a
good
great
enough
way.
For me.
It was a great way of them nodding to the larger story that's happening between her connection to Bruce and the development of the Justice League, in a sense, and so it nodded to that, but then it strayed and told its own story. So it served its purpose really well, I think.
Okay. But he was the only connection. Like, you didn't see, like, Green Lantern or something like that.
No. No.
Something
no.
really wild.
No, no. That, no Flash, no Green Arrow. Yeah, nothing like that. But it served its purpose to nod to say, hey, this is the universe we're in. It's its own story, but don't forget, it also takes place here. I really wish I could talk spoilers, and I can't wait till you see it so we can maybe go in depth, even if it's off air and not on the podcast. But it's just such a wonderful movie.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, it's just funny going on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like you click on Wonder Woman, and it's like DC Extended Universe, and you see going down the list, it's the first movie that has, like, a positive reception. It's like Wonder Woman 94%, and then critics 93%.
Oh, it's 94 now?
Yeah.
It was 93 last night after we checked after the movie.
Snap.
Oh, that's even better. I love it.
It's very interesting how they were able to do so well, despite the fact that Marvel pays off Rotten Tomatoes to give DC films negative reviews. And just going underneath, it's Suicide Squad 25%, 62%, Dawn of Justice 72%, I mean 27%, and critic, and I mean whatever, normal people 63%, Man of Steel 55%, and then just the regular viewers 75%. So it's the first movie that has gotten more than 75%.
I can't believe Man of Steel has like 30% 30% higher rating than BVS.
I mean, a lot of people did like Man of Steel.
I thought as much as I dislike BVS, I think that, I don't know if it's a better movie, but I enjoyed it more.
Than Man of Steel.
Yeah, Man of Steel was rough.
When I saw it in IMAX. When I saw it when it came out, I enjoyed it. But, I don't know, maybe subsequent viewing, it's just, maybe I wasn't into it as that. As
law of diminishing returns.
Yes. And then, you know how I feel about BVS. It's like, I really want to enjoy it, but it's just, there's things I really do like about it, but then there's just, like, the overall story was just, it wasn't, I didn't hate it, but I was just expecting more.
Let me say this, as far as Zack Snyder's concerned, because we rib on him quite often, and I don't think he's a bad filmmaker. I like a lot of his movies. I think when it comes to these movies, he hasn't tuned in to what it is that makes the characters work. He has his vision of the characters, and then there's the actual vision of the characters, I think. But I will say, since he's credited as a writer on this movie, I don't know how much he put into it, into Wonder Woman, but he proved here that he's at least partially responsible for making a kick-ass movie. I think maybe the problem is his directing, like his vision as a director, rather than everything else regarding the characters, like how he views them, views the characters himself. I almost get the feeling that he's like, so this is like complete conjecture and assumptions of on my end, but maybe he's trying to insert himself so much into the DC EU. Like, he almost wants to be a character. Like, the director is a character in this movie, almost. Like, it's this bizarre kind of fascination, I guess. I don't know. But maybe the key to these movies is not having Snyder in the director's chair, but have him produce or write the films as a team, collaborative.
That is interesting. Because it's like, the whole time we were saying, well, they need somebody else to head up this, this universe, but you know, maybe behind the scenes, but
well, Jeff Johns is also I don't think he was credited as a writer, but Jeff Johns was involved in some capacity for this film too. I think his influence didn't go unnoticed either. So I don't know, they finally had all the pieces in place for it. You can't have this movie without a kick-ass director, Patty Jenkins. She killed it. Can't have this movie without a kick-ass Wonder Woman. And I said it earlier, and I'll say it again, I don't think anyone else could have played this role. I cannot envision anyone else as this role. Like, for this specific movie, this tone, this, the character, how it is now, you know, how she's portrayed now in the inner, like, the larger DC universe, it was perfect. Gal Gadot kicked ass.
Yes, I guess as we expected, you know.
I mean, that little glimpse we got into
Dawn of BVS.
Dawn of BVS. And,
well, that was one of the things everybody seemed to like.
Yeah, I was going to say, it comforted everyone. It did, and I think that helped. It's so tough talking non-spoilers for this movie. I'm trying to write a review. I might hold off and wait till you see it and just write a spoilery review, because I'm trying to be complimentary.
Well, you could write it. I won't read it right now.
I know, but it's well, fair enough. Yeah, because the spoiler-free review is not, it's not been working for me right now.
We'll just leave everything out.
I have like 5 drafts of it. I can cut spoilers out of most other things, but this movie, I just like, it's, I'm so happy with how it is. I just want to talk about everything, I think, is what it is.
I kind of know what you're getting at, because from some of the things I've read, which could kind of be, I kind of know what's going to happen a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I kind of understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to talk about villains and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, I didn't touch upon any of the major villains while talking about this.
Yeah, I hear there's
some,
like, twists involved and stuff. So.
There's a huge twist, and it was beautiful. It was well executed.
Chris Pines ends up being Ra's al Ghul.
He's actually Talia.
Which, that I almost forgot, but I was hearing, like, the influences are supposed to be, like, you know, Batman Begins and, like, Richard Donner's Superman and...
1,000% Richard Donner's Superman. There's an alleyway scene that is like a direct nod to Richard Donner's Superman movie. Nice. And yeah, no, it's wonderful. Like this movie, I think, wears its influences on its sleeve without aping anything. It's its own quantity, but it acknowledges what came before it.
So speaking of Wonder Woman, you read Batwoman number 3?
I did, and this came out a couple weeks ago. I wanted to talk about it. I know we haven't recorded in quite some time. I wanted to talk about it then, but I will say it's weird because I'm going from like a very positive review about DC to a slightly negative one, where I was going to say this was probably the most coherent issue.
Yeah.
The most straightforward issue. Did you read this?
No.
All right. And
but
so,
I'm just trying to show you that I'm paying attention.
Yeah, let me just say that like it's most straightforward, most coherent. I was pretty engaged, but man, this series just lost me. Like this was my last issue.
I read the first one. I was just I got up to the second one. I was just like,
This was definitely the best out of all of them, including maybe
and you
even
still want to give it up.
And yeah, the coloring, Jeremy Cox, who colors Steve Epting's art on this book, the coloring was leaps and bounds better than it was the past few issues, but it's still not. I'm sure Jeremy Cox is a great colorist. I don't really recognize the name from other books. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Steve Epting, I have a distinct vision in my head of what the colors should look like. And maybe this is my personal hang-up, that it's not a Dean White or a Betty Breitweiser, Elizabeth Breitweiser. But he's not really on their level. And he doesn't play into the little, like, idiosyncrasies, you know, and that's the right word for, you know, the for his art.
So it doesn't fit.
It doesn't. It's fine. This issue is better. It's fine, but it's not. It doesn't help Epting's art at all.
Hmm.
Like, there are a few scenes. There's one where it's like a. Looks like rainfall. That was probably the best page of coloring, but then you go back to human figures and it just loses its detail. Like there's a lot of detail that those colorists help with to make his art shine, you know, in previous works. And I think the artwork is gorgeous. Steve Epting is still perfect. He's perfection. But I think it would serve him better to find a different colorist for this book. So, but yeah, everything going against it. And while I like did enjoy it, I just felt that I needed to say that I can no longer stick with this book. I gave it a shot. I tried. I was super excited for it. And it's disappointing to me because I was really looking forward to this book. I kept talking it up before it actually came out. Because I was so excited. But it's not... I don't know... I still don't know what they're trying to do with this book. They're, you know, Batwoman's elsewhere, and I get it. But I kind of want her to be in Gotham or in America. And maybe some interactions with Detective. I know it's like the rest of the crew and Detective, but... yeah. After this, I don't have any more DC on my pre-order.
Hmm.
You know, I might pick up Batman and Flash and stuff, but DC is off my pre-order list, and Marvel is one book away from the same. I'm kind of either going to transition to trades for the big two, because I'm still going to pre-order my indie stuff, and two of those books I'll talk about in a little bit, but... Yeah, DC. Like, I'm sure I'll still read Flash, but the fear I have with like Flash, or even because Batman's so inconsistent, I don't want to pre-order the books. Like, I'd rather just wait till they come out and decide if I'm enjoying the storyline rather than be stuck with the next two or three issues ahead of time.
They just need Swamp Thing in them.
Yeah, it was a good book. Alan Moore, just shoot him in the beginning, the Alan Moore analog that they had. But I enjoyed that issue of Batman.
And that whole button thing, that 23. Conclusion.
The button was great, yeah.
Doomsday Clock in November, I guess.
I can't wait for the next...
With the Superman insignia.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Doomsday Clock to come out. The button served a great... It served as a great introduction, like prelude to the larger event. Although the one thing that worries me about the button or the Doomsday Clock is like Geoff Johns is like, yeah, it started off as like 6 issues, but maybe it'll go 12. Like, how about we not do that? Let's decide what it's going to be now.
Yeah.
So I know whether I'm buying 6 issues or 12.
Yeah. What do we care? It's not our money.
Exactly. And
just like Apple.
I don't, considering that I've cut all DC pre-orders out, and I'm about to cut all Marvel out. And then again, you know, I'll read digitally and whatnot, but or I'll trade weight. But I have no patience for this anymore. I think a lot of it is the event fatigue from Marvel. And Marvel says they're done with events for 18 months, but then they have the Legacy sort of event initiative coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have another, like, Venom something or another happening that's turning into, like, a mini-event. Like, don't lie to us about that shit. I can't... You're fucking with my money, and I don't appreciate that. At least now know what I get when I read the indies. Like, that's it. I don't need to worry about tie-ins for Saga. Yeah, that's... I mean, I'm enjoying the Marvel books, like the X-Men books. I am really enjoying that. But... I get the feeling that those are just going to read better in trade. So I'm going to switch to that. But I don't want to make it sound like I'm super down on DC and Marvel. Well, maybe DC a little bit more so I am, just because... I don't know. I need that title to spark my interest again, to get me jazzed. And I'm hoping the next Batman storyline will do that, and the next Flash. I haven't read this week's Flash, but... I actually have it, but I just I haven't read it yet. And I saw you read that. How is it?
It was good.
Green Lantern's in it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to say Green Lantern's in it, which is cool. So, yeah. And there's some annuals that came out. I didn't read the Trinity one yet, but I read the Wonder Woman.
I read the first... I was actually going to post one of the... scenes on our Instagram, but mm-hmm. I didn't yet because I didn't read the full Wonder Woman annual. I just read the first story, and it cracked me up when Clark and Bruce get together and they're like, you know, we have an issue we have to keep out for, we have to look out, blah blah blah, and they're kind of spying on Wonder Woman. She shows up and then she puts the lasso around them and she's like, tell me your names.
Batman.
Superman's like Clark Kent, and the Batman's like Batman. And Superman's like, really?
Yeah, that was funny.
I thought that was so great. But I still haven't read the rest of that of the annual yet. I just love that DC had something to... Like, Marvel did this with Guardians, where they had 3 Guardians books, you know, come out on the week that the movie came out. And I just love that DC had a new issue. Even though it's a 5th week, they worked with it by putting the Wonder Woman annual out the week the movie drops. That's what they need to do. Oh, and one other thing, sorry, real quick, but regarding the movie, I just want to give props to DC, because when we bought our tickets through Fandango... We got 3. We got digital codes for 3 Wonder Woman books.
Snap.
And I know Marvel does that. I've never had that with DC yet. Not to say that DC hasn't done that, but I haven't experienced it. But props to them for doing that.
They better give me some goddamn codes. Which theater was this?
The theater was the Showplace Icon.
Wait, so who was it? The theater? Or I'm stupid.
No, it's Fandango.
Oh, Fandango did it. Yeah, Fandango did it. Oh, so if I do this, I should order it through Fandango.
Yeah, yeah. They hopefully will give you the comics codes. It was for three of them. It was Legends of Wonder Woman. It was Wonder Woman Rebirth issue.
Which, oh, so you didn't get to pick them.
No, you don't get to pick them, no.
Son of a bitch.
But, and then there was an issue of Wonder Woman number one that Alan Heinberg wrote, which I thought was appropriate since he co-wrote the movie, so.
Word.
Yeah. Did you read anything else that you want to talk about before I jump into my last two books?
Nothing that springs to mind, just like a bunch of Marvel Unlimited stuff. Yeah, just reading a lot of the older Spider-Man stuff, and,
I forgot if I talked about it on this podcast, but you saying Marvel Unlimited reminded me. I signed up for Comixology Unlimited, and I'm enjoying it a lot so far. I know it's usually just kind of first volumes and whatnot, but it's getting me to check out a lot of series that I hadn't or would not have, checked out otherwise. And I'm enjoying it a lot. Although I've kind of put that on hold for the past week because I've been in the middle of a Brad Meltzer novel that I'm trying to finish up by tomorrow. I was trying to finish it in a week, but I think I will. But yeah, no, Comixology Unlimited has been pretty cool so far. But as far as books this week, I did pick up Killer Be Killed, number 9. And I know you read this, so I'll keep it spoiler-free for your sake. But shit goes down in this book. Major shit goes down regarding Russians that may or may not have been after Dylan and Dylan's drug dealer. It's cool because the story arc is going to wrap up with issue 10. So things are kind of, it's a nice climax, I guess, to what's happening in the overall story, but then the story arc specifically. Dylan gets himself into a rough situation by making a couple stupid decisions. And also, there's just more of Sean Phillips drawing New York City, because this is gorgeous. I want to live in Sean Phillips' version of New York City. Not even real New York, just Sean Phillips' version. But that's really all I have to say. Just checking in, I guess, more so with Killer Be Killed. But I did read, last book I'll talk about is Saga number 43.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is back from its little hiatus. They put out 6 issues, take a month or two off, and they'll put out a trade in between, and then come back for 6 issues, take a month or two off, put a trade out, come back for 6 issues, and they do this. But then their cycles are a little longer after every 18 issues, I think. So 18-36. But this was off for a month or two. So it's nice, because I always forget just how long I am without Saga. Just, like, it's not one of those books where it could be like 6 months. Not that it has been, but it's still, you remember everything with this book. Like, it's so specific to its world that it's not that hard to just jump back in and understand where you're at. And I think they do a lot of good, not even exposition, just recapping in with the story. But that's Brian K. Vaughan being a great writer. But so a couple things I want to talk about. They deal with a couple of issues, maybe touchy subjects to some people, very tastefully, I thought. Mm. Although Saga is known for always having a, not necessarily shocking, but pretty, maybe shocking is the right word. They usually try to shock you with the first page. So you open this book, and on right on page 1, it's a little squirrel looking bird owl. It's a little owl. So I'm always say it's squirrel. It's a little owl dude.
Squirrel bird.
And he kind of looks like this Western sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And the sign says, "Welcome to Abortion Town." And
it's a comedy.
Yeah, it's Saga, there's a lot of humor in the book, but they touch abortion on very town. Real subjects and
can
shit.
Can we change the name of this podcast to Abortion Town?
Abortion Town.
Welcome to Abortion Town, mixed reviews.
So, and you're like, oh my god, where are they going with this? And I gotta spoil the last arc a little bit, so listeners, if you haven't, if you're not caught up with Saga, you might want to skip this part. I know Saga's much like Walking Dead with the spoiler ban, but I'm giving you fair warning right now. So, there was an issue with Alana, one of the main characters, Alana, and her husband, Marco. They're pregnant with a second child. They were, at the end of the last arc, they're trying to escape the planet. I forget what planet they were on, but they're trying to escape, and Alana's like 8 months pregnant, and she ends up getting hit or falls. I don't remember exactly what happened, but she gets bumped, and she's like, I can't feel the baby anymore. And that's kind of how the story ended. So here we are now. She's like, I have this dead baby inside me. I need to, like, I'm 8 months pregnant. I don't want to carry it to term. It's not alive. Like, I want it out of me. Because also with her, the species that she is, like, the baby living inside of her is also toxic because it's going to start sucking the life out of her. It could cause, like, all these different diseases and like, not diseases, but all these, words. I can't think of words. But all these different complications within her body and her biology and everything. And it's potentially life-threatening. So they deal with that. And I think it's done very tastefully. Now we cut to, we're not done with risque topics in this book, because then we cut to Hazel, who is Marco and Alana's daughter. She's a little kid, and Petrichor, who is part of their group. And a couple, it might have been a couple arcs ago, actually. It might have been last arc, I don't remember. But Hazel ended up seeing that Petrichor, who is a female, but she was born a male. She's trans.
Mm-hmm.
So she, as far as human anatomy goes, she, you know, has the male sexual parts. So she has a penis. So Hazel, they're just talking, and then Hazel goes, "Oh, that reminds me. Can I ask about your penis?" And Petrichor's like, "You most certainly may not." And then it's this very interesting take on trans misogyny and how it's dealt with, and things that may not be appropriate to talk about that people wouldn't necessarily think about. Because something like that is, you know, to a person, it's private. Not, you know, not everyone knows that. Like, right now, Hazel is the only one that really knows about Petrichor being transgender. And so you find it's a little kid being curious, so it's interesting that, but I think she also kind of represents a lot of people, even adults, that blurt things out, not necessarily knowing the effects that it might have on someone in a situation, you know, in a situation like that. That's how they live their life, you know, whether they're comfortable or not. It's their choice what information they're willing to divulge to people or the world and everything. And but then you also find out it's because Hazel is mixed, because her parents are two different essentially races, I guess. But and so Hazel is feeling identity issues herself, and you see it within her. So it's like this beautiful moment of just essentially how to deal with trans misogyny. But also we get a little character development on Hazel. And, you know, she's this beautiful being that there's really just one of her.
Mm-hmm.
But she feels so alone because of it. And it's very it's hard to explain, but it's a great take on larger issues at hand and how people may deal with it themselves or may deal with knowing others, you know, in situations like that.
Word.
I think Saga is a great book. I think Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples, Fiona Staples, the artist, but Brian K. Vaughan's always been, he's not one to shy away from the shock. I mean, he's been doing shit like that in Why the Last Man and Ex Machina.
Ex Machina is, that's a comic book?
It is. It's not, Are you thinking of the movie Deus Ex Machina or Ex Machina? Or what? No, the movie Ex Machina is not.
That's different.
That's different. That's not the same.
Okay.
Same thing.
So I saw that movie, so I was wondering.
Yeah, I actually haven't. I heard it's all right, but
it's like meh.
the comic.
See
is,
what I think of it.
Maybe I'll check it out. But the comic, the Brian K. Vaughan comic, is about a mayor of New York City who has the power to essentially communicate with technology and machines. And in this world, he prevented the second tower from being attacked in 9/11. So it's a revisionist history.
Why didn't he prevent the first tower from being attacked? Not so great, is he?
Ex Machina is worth checking out. I actually haven't finished the series. It's 10 volumes. I read like 7 or 8 of them, but and I like it. It's just slow going. It's not
okay.
Like Why the Last Man, where once
it's
I read
probably better than that movie that has no relation to it.
Very possible. But once I, you know, once I read Why the Last Man, I couldn't put the book down, and I consumed all 10 volumes in maybe 2 weeks. I feel like, or 3 weeks. You know
I just got that, but. Is, like, why the last man, like, why in place of W-H-Y?
Y stands for, the Y is Yorick. Like, the main character's name is Yorick. Oh.
Okay, so I didn't figure anything out.
So you have Why the Last Man?
No, I was just thinking of that title because I hear that a lot.
Okay.
Because it comes up on, like, comic things and...
I've said it a lot, but besides Preacher, that's my favorite series. Why is incredible. I would highly recommend you check it out. I think you would enjoy it. There's a lot of humor in Brian K. Vaughan books that I think are kind of right up your alley.
Cool. What do you got? Like a half an hour left?
Yeah, I was actually just about to say. Do you want to
talk about Arrow?
I don't know if I have a half hour's worth of discussion in
29 minutes of Arrow coming up.
But, you know what? First, let's start off with what you thought. I think you and I might be parallel on a lot of what happened with this episode, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on the season finale.
So when did this happen? Like a week ago?
A week and a half, yeah.
Because I don't even remember. I remember it was like a big deal, kind of, because it was like everybody's going to be on the island or whatever. And
yep.
I'm trying to remember what my immediate reaction was, what I was saying to you. I think something along the lines of, I bet you, like, at the end of it, when Adrian Chase just shoots himself in, or imposter Adrian Chase, because that's not the real name, when he shoots himself in the head and everybody, and that triggers this device to, like, blow up everything on the island, I was saying to you, I bet you no one's going to end up dying from it.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure
miraculously,
no one's
it's they CW'd it.
I guarantee that they ended up getting, it was like probably Curtis or Felicity figuring out like one spot that's not charged where they might be just out of blast radius.
Thankfully, oh my god, we've discovered this hidden underground bunker. They all went to like Slade's prison and just jumped in there.
Everything about the episode, I was calling like a minute before it happened.
Hmm.
And I was like, all right, that's fine. Like, it's kind of fun. But it was also kind of frustrating, too, because I saw exactly where it was going, and I'm like, I don't know. Give me something. Give me something more to bite into. Although I will say the explosion at the end did surprise me because I thought they were gonna they were just gonna chicken out and not follow through with it. And it is interesting because it's like one of those. Well, how do you survive that? How do you get out of the situation? How do you overcome it? Kind of thing. But I don't know. They have a this series has a real problem with season finales.
Yeah,
I mean they have other problems too, but this season finale is. I thought it was fine. I didn't hate it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's trying to remember key moments of it. I know one key thing is Malcolm steps on the landmine and it explodes.
That was
Captain
one of my
Boomerang and Co.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes actually because it was probably the best Malcolm moment we've ever had on this show.
Yeah. Well, you got to make me like Malcolm after I've been saying they should get rid of him for years.
I know, that's what they're going to end up doing with Felicity, like the episode when they finally decide to kill her, if
yeah,
that ever
happens.
Yeah,
they'll make her not obnoxious and annoying.
They'll make her the best character, and I'm like, come on, man. Are you going to make me miss her now? I love that, or it was when Thea stepped on the mine.
And he's just like, whoop, look over there, and he just steps on it.
He like Benny Hill'd her, but he, the whole thing was great too because it was this total father daughter moment that they had. It was like so predictable. It was like almost cute in a way that they're arguing. She's like, she's freaking out, and he's like, I'm gonna do it. And she's like, you're not stepping on it. And he's like, yes, I am. He's like, I didn't ask your permission or whatever the hell he said. He just like shoves her off, just does it. And it was like his redeeming moment as a father and as a character. Like, he's been such a shitbag these past 5 seasons. You have to give him a nice moment like that.
Well, you know, Rob, in his defense, everything he's done is to protect her. You know, because having the boat break into two, the Queen's Gambit, the Undertaking.
Oh, yeah.
Every having her under a spell kill Sarah, everything was just for Thea's benefit.
And man, it's a good thing that he, you know, told us nearly like every time he popped up on screen. Because I don't think we would have figured it out.
I did like the moment of Slade, and you almost think he double-crossed Oliver.
But they
planned that out.
I knew, because I was like, oh, he's going to double cross him right now, and it's going to be a setup. And they did it, and I was still, like, excited that they pulled through, so I can't even, like, it's one of those stupid things where it's like, oh, I knew it was going to happen, but because I thought it was kind of predictable, because I figured that's where they were going, and they pulled it off, and I still was happy that they did that anyway. I was like, yes, okay, that's excellent. What's funny, though, is he double crosses Oliver, like, 2 feet away from Nyssa. Like, Nyssa just walks away, and then he attacks Oliver. Like, she would have heard you.
They could have done a buddy comp. I think they shoot a buddy comedy with Nyssa and Merlin.
they could definitely do. I'd watch the hell out of that. They'd have to do it from hell now, since, you know, he's dead.
I'm skeptical of that, even with how
you don't think he's dead. Well, you don't see it. None of these deaths are on screen.
Yes, that is a big proponent of me not believing anything, and it's like, and
you
it's
never
based
believe
off
a
comics
death that's
where nobody's screen. Ever dead.
Exactly, and off a TV show where nobody's ever dead, and off, you know, it's like it's all of this, everything.
Like, is it even believable that Curtis is still alive? Because he's completely useless when he's trying to fight people, and he's still alive.
I think it's, like, dumb luck is on his side. I think that's what it is. It's dumb luck. I can't see them going any more than one more season.
Yeah, that'll probably be it.
I kind of want it to be, because I don't want them to go too far down this hole of mediocrity where, like, I don't look back on it as a show that I didn't enjoy, like what Lost turned into. I don't want that. I felt like I wasted a lot of time with that show. I don't want to feel that with Arrow, because I've enjoyed it a lot throughout the years.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got new things on the horizon. They have, like, Black Lightning's coming up. That's going to be probably in the middle of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the trailer for that?
I did not. Was it any good?
It seemed like... Well, I know initially it was supposed to be on Fox. It seemed like... You know, it's like a black family or, you know, whatever. It's like the guy's like middle-aged, so it's not like this like young kid or whatever. So it starts off at a place where like the guy's kind of like a grizzled veteran kind of thing.
I like that.
Yeah, it did seem cool, and he's got, you know, kids and everything. So it didn't seem very CW, but that could be a good thing.
I like that a lot, because not everyone needs to... I feel like too many origin stories are younger person. They're still growing up, and whether it's adolescence or early adulthood.
Yeah, I like that it's a different, he's a different age bracket, and it did kind of what do you call it? It just felt like this is like a show you'd watch on Fox, like a Boston Public or like Empire or something. It gave up that feel with it. Don't get me wrong, it has nothing in common with those shows,
yeah,
but just the vibe of, you know what I'm talking about,
the aesthetic kind Fox has a very specific aesthetic in their shows. It's very true, even though like a lot of their shows are like you said, you know, not similar, but it is, you could tell a Fox show from an NBC show, I think.
Yeah,
from an ABC show.
Yeah, it's, like, more urban, for lack of better... Because, I mean, Fox does have a lot of, you know, like, Boston Public was like that, which I did used to watch some time ago, and Empire, which I don't watch, but it's, like...
I hear that show is great, though.
Yeah, I've heard that, you know, a lot of people like that one, but...
Yeah,
I mean,
I haven't watched it.
But... Yeah, when I worked at Sony... We'd get some, like, promotional behind-the-scenes, like, videos and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Yeah, so, I just remember them, like, talking about, like, I guess the process of recording the songs. Because I guess, like, the people on the show, they'll actually sing, you know? Like, they're actors, but they'll actually, like, sing for the parts.
Yeah.
Because it is a music show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like Glee, I guess, but yeah, not really. Yeah.
Which, I guess that makes sense that, you know, they did that musical thing because they were both on Glee. And then I would assume John Barrowman, he has to be involved with some kind of theater stuff, you know, singing. And so it made sense that they would all sing or whatever.
Well, yeah, John Barrowman does come from theater and whatnot, yeah.
That's funny. They asked, like, just bringing it back to Arrow, it's like they asked Stephen Amell, like, oh, will there ever be Arrow singing music? Nope. you think there's going to be a sing-song episode on Punisher? We used to call him Green Batman. I'm just calling him Punisher Green or Green Punisher now. Because it's gotten so far beyond Batman.
It's so far beyond Green Arrow. Yeah. So far beyond anything.
Which I will say, you know, reading some of, like, Green Arrow is, like, I know that in the beginning they were just like, oh, let's have a character that's like Batman, and that's how it started.
Yeah.
But, that's how it, you know, originated. But, like, if you read the Green Arrow stuff, he's not Batman. And he's even, it's weird because it's like, he's more like a liberal-ish kind of, but... It's still like he never says he has a problem with killing people. You know what I mean? Whereas Batman's whole thing is no killing. This season they're just like trying to make it like, oh, he liked killing all along. That made no sense.
It made no sense at all.
I don't even think the Punisher is like that. I just think he like lost kind of his soul because like his family was killed.
it's something he does. It's not something he enjoys doing or wants to do. It's like a compulsion that he has. Like, he feels like it's part of what he has to do.
The Punisher is like the Mafia. You know, I don't want to have to do this, but
you know what? I enjoyed more than the Arrow finale.
Everything that ever happened on Earth.
Stephen Amell's appearance on Celebrity Ninja Warrior.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. I mean, I heard about that and I saw like the clip.
It was cool because he went last, and for every obstacle every obstacle the celebrity completed, they'd give $5,000 to the charity.
He definitely made it all the way through.
He made it all the way, and not only that, but he was the last one to go because while they're training. They also talked, they do those little vignettes, and he's like, yeah, I do the salmon ladder on the show and everything. And he's like, oh, I hope there's a salmon ladder. And there was no salmon ladder during the entire course.
There wasn't?
So, well, he gets to the end and I'm like, oh, they're going to give him a salmon ladder now. He hits the buzzer and they're like, how are you feeling? He's like, well, I'd feel better if there was a salmon ladder, if I do one more obstacle. And they're like, go for it. So there's a salmon ladder and he does it.
Nah. Yeah, that's what I heard, that they put a Sam letter there because he requested it.
Yeah, it was strictly for him. No other celebrity did it. It was just because he did it. Wanted it and does it on the show and everything.
And all the other celebrities probably just like fell on the first step.
Nick Swisher kicked ass, but they didn't really show much of his. Probably because it's Nick Swisher, and he was probably bitching about something the entire time. But like the clips they showed, it looked like he was kind of kicking the course's ass.
Well, yeah, he should be. He's an athlete.
I know. Yeah,
I know. It's a baseball player, but
he's
still,
he's a bigger dude too. But yeah, he is an athlete.
That's although, my dig at baseball.
But no, some of the other celebrities were fine.
Anybody some I would know her? Not really.
Mina Savari. What's her name? Savini.
Is she like a wrestler?
No, she's a.
Actress. Mina Sorvino?
No, hang on. This is going to bother me. She was in...
She like the one from American Beauty?
American Beauty and American Pie, yes.
So she's only in movies with American in the title.
Yeah. What's her name? Mina Savini.
I know what you're talking about, but... did good or she fell on her face?
What the hell's her name? I can't... Well, it was interesting, too, because she had... like this crazy bit of anxiety going on when she was doing the course. Mm-hmm. Like she was completely scared of the whole thing. Like she, training didn't go well for her. And, like she was just afraid of the course and she was like legit having, these like mini panic episodes.
So that sounds like something they could do on SNL to mock that.
Yeah, but she ended up like beating the course, like with the help. She like ended up doing it, and then she needed some help for certain parts. And then what they did was cool because some of the trainers who are the American Ninja Warrior athletes, they formed this like human ladder that she like climbed up for the warp wall. It's like really cool seeing stuff like that. It's all for charity and everything, and it was like the joy on her face that she completed it, with the help of others and. It was cool. It was like a feel good episode. So.
So it seems like a lot of people made it through the course.
A few.
Did they make it easier since it's for charity?
No, they you were allowed to. They kind of bent the rules a little bit. Like you were supposed to. Like if you fell, that was kind of it. But like you were allowed to have your trainer do one of the obstacles, and some people just like skip to the end. And they're like, we're bending the rules a little bit, just like, because they want you to complete those courses, so.
It's like on The Simpsons where there's like, Marge becomes a police officer, and everybody, and she's jumping over the wall, and they're like, women always have the hardest time with the wall. They never seem to find the door, and you see that there's just a door that everybody just opens through.
Nikki Glaser was on. She's
a comedian, right?
Yeah, she is. I love her, but she didn't do so hot. But it was fun watching her.
I just know that name because I always see her things on Netflix because it just pops up as an ad,
Yeah. Now Nikki Glaser is awesome. She's
I don't know if her show on Comedy Central is coming back, but she had a pretty funny show on Comedy Central for a while. Anything else about Arrow finale? I feel like there wasn't... I feel like for a lot happening, there's not much to talk about with the finale. You know, Oliver made a choice to save his son and shoot Adrian Chase in the leg, but keeping him alive. You know he's going to end up taking his own life. I felt like it was so...
It made sense.
Yeah, it did. It did.
But then you kind of think, it's like, why didn't this happen earlier in the year?
This could didn't have to happen on the island. Like, they just wanted Oliver back on the island.
And what happens with Slade now? Does he, I guess...
Well, he's dead, apparently, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah, that's true. See, I don't think he's dead, though.
I don't think anyone's dead.
Although maybe Felicity is the only one that's dead, and we got her push.
Oh, the only one dead.
Yeah.
If she's the only one alive.
No, they can't do that because they're building up.
Then I'm not
going to
watch that anymore.
They're building up her relationship with Oliver. There's no way that she can die. They spent the last three episodes like trying to ship them again.
They've learned nothing.
They've learned absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. They just need to get rid of her.
And did we mention that? That guy, the Justice League Dark guy, left.
Oh, that's right, the director.
Yeah, they're having a they're having a competition with Flash just to see how many people will leave the project. Although I heard that like Roger Zemeckis, they're trying to get him to do the Flash now.
Dude, they're gonna have Patty Jenkins, Joss Whedon, and James Wan direct everything.
Yeah, just have Joss Whedon just. Take over everything.
Give them creative control.
But it is, I mean, even though it's a Justice League, it's a Zack Snyder movie, Joss Whedon's going to be finishing the movie. It's still Zack Snyder.
Exactly, and we've talked about this off air, but I'm really worried that there are going to be a lot of good things in this movie, and people are going to automatically credit to Joss Whedon.
That's probably what's going to happen.
And, like, because... Everyone has so little faith in Zack Snyder that he can't possibly, you know, do right by these characters. So if it's right, it was Joss Whedon. And I feel like we're not going to know that. We're not going to know which parts really he had a hand in and not. Maybe it's not that cut and dry. Maybe the influence isn't that obvious. I don't know. But the way people react, especially... The way people reacted after the news of Zack Snyder's, you know, him stepping down from the movie to spend time with his family because of the tragedy of his daughter committing suicide, and seeing some of the reactions of people disgusted me. It's absolutely, like, you have no, like, I understand, like, okay, maybe he's not your favorite director, and his take on your favorite character isn't what you want, but to wish that kind of stuff upon people... Like the laugh reaction on Facebook, or just people being assholes on the message boards. Like, that's disgusting.
Yeah, well, it is to be expected, though, with people these days.
It is, because no one has fucking tact.
That's true.
No one has decency.
But then, I mean, think about it this way. It's like, if I'm in traffic yesterday, and it's like, everybody's just, they don't care. They run over people. Like, I was driving to New York, and it's like, there's a green light. And I see people that are walking in the walkway because I'm making a right turn. Do you think people behind me are cognizant of this? Or they just don't care? So it's like, they're honking me. Like mm-hmm. And this happens every time I drive in the city. They're honking me as if they expect me to just plow over people. Mm-hmm. Just run over them. And that is just a microcosm of people at large. They just don't give a shit about anybody. They're very self-involved.
A lot of people are just in their own little bubble. It's frustrating to see that shit. Like, it's the internet, so you could say what you want without consequence because you're faceless. And, you know, if it's a message board and blah, blah, blah. People do that shit all the time, but it doesn't make it any less disgusting. Like, how do you feel good about yourself that after the fact? That whole thing just really bothered me, though, but... What do you think it is?
I think overall people weren't like that. The majority of the people seem to be like, you know, even though his movies are terrible, or yeah. Even though he hates Batman and Superman, you know, or whatever. But
for the most part,
people weren't jerks about it.
That's true. I was focusing on the the very vocal few, the minority. But even then, like, you don't even need to put assholes. That condition in. You just say, that sucks. Or, you know, I'm sorry.
I mean,
even... Oh, did you hear someone from high school died? Well, even though they stole my pencil in third grade, I think that kind of sucks. Like you don't need those conditions on it, necessarily. It's just... It's tragic.
Think about it. You gotta think about it like this way. All these people that are complaining and saying, like, oh, blah, blah, I'm glad that this happened because you made a crappy movie or I didn't like the movie. It's like, shut up. I mean, even if you don't like his movies or... I mean... Who are you? You're a loser. This guy actually went out and did stuff with his life. He's a director, so he can make shitty movies, but he was able to convince Warner Brothers that he's capable of making Superman movies and all of this stuff. So it's like he's done with his life way more than you'll ever do or have done. This is just to the people that are being assholes.
I think a lot of it's jealousy or, you know, it's projection, all that. Yeah. But
To quote Marge Simpson, you know, Homer, it's really easy to criticize. And then Homer says, fun, too. A terrible thing happened to him, and I kind of felt bad that he had even mentioned that it happened.
I was just about to bring that up because you made a good point. Like, if he didn't go public with the news, there would have been so many...
Like assholes like me, see?
And even me, I'd be like, what is... You know, probably, I mean, not that I even care, but I would just probably be like, DC needs to get their shit together without knowing anything, you know, but making that judgment. But maybe him coming clean, coming public with it was what he needed to do for his family, too. Maybe it's part of the healing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it humanizes him more, too, because it's... It does. You know, he's like reading up on him, and it's like, I didn't realize he has like, he had 8 kids, well, 7 now, unfortunately, but he had like,
he had that many kids?
The thing is, I think he had 6 like kids that are his actual kids. Or not, I know everybody's nitpicking with language nowadays, and everybody's sensitive.
You mean like,
He had 6 kids and then 2 adopted kids. Biological.
6 biological kids.
Yeah. I know everybody wants to be offended by the slightest thing now, but he has two adopted kids. And I mean, this child that died was one of his biological kids from his first marriage.
The whole situation is just depressing. It's sad.
Yeah, there was a lot of
it's the death, the type of death surrounding it.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of death last week. Well, I guess that we found out about because was it
Chris
Greg Allman died, and of course, I think like a day before that it was like Chris Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
So it is pretty crazy.
It's absolutely horrible. That's great. Let's just end this podcast on quite the depressing note. But I do have to jet out of here though. But thank you to everyone for tuning in and listening to us chit-chat about good stuffs and me ramble about Wonder Woman, giving the vaguest review possible. But
well, that's good. It's like the first time like a DC movie is like people are liking it.
Dude, that was the longest I think I've ever talked about a DC film in this connected universe, without complaining about it on this podcast. So, I think that's pretty damn awesome. I think it's great. And yeah, you're right, man. It's people are stoked about it. People are jazzed about it. And I think it is 100% deserving of the hype. Believe the hype.
Take that Public Enemy song and just play it backwards.
Play it backwards. But yeah, no, thank you for everyone for tuning in. And if you are listening to us on iTunes, if you want to rate and review us, that's cool. If not, then that's fine too.
No, I'm sorry, that's just not good enough. You gotta rate and review us or you're dead to us.
I'm not gonna lie, I haven't checked our ratings and reviews in a while, so we appreciate those who have done it in the past.
It was just Mike pretty much, I think, that reviewed.
Well, yeah, but there were a few ratings.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and we appreciate that. So thank you for anyone doing that. That is.
Yeah, when I say rate or reviewer and, it's all encompassing.
I don't know if you can rate or review us on Stitcher, although I am one stupid glitch away from changing from switching over to the Stitcher app from the stupid iTunes one.
I just use iTunes because it's just got embedded into my head that if that's like the official podcast of like Major League Baseball or something, like I feel like that's the most legitimate thing.
It's
because I guess it's the most convenient from Apple.
Yeah, it's definitely the most convenient thing. Right. But now I think that's kind of I've stuck with that out of habit, but I know a lot of people don't enjoy it, but. Yeah, maybe if you can rate and review us in other places, that's cool too. If not, well, thank you for listening to us anyway. We appreciate it.
I do notice a lot of the times, though, like, you'll download something and it'll say, this is not available. And then all of a sudden it'll be available. Like, I don't know what's going on.
But you know what you have to do? Sometimes it's...
smash your phone.
Sometimes it's the server of the you know, whatever podcast it is. Sometimes
like the feed?
The feed, yeah. Sometimes it's because you did not smash your phone, so you really do have to smash your phone. But other times you just get out and close the app and then jump back into it and it's fine. That shit drives me nuts. That happened to me like with three different podcasts yesterday.
But really, so, you just should smash your phone for good measure.
Yeah, throw it to the ground. Oh yeah, social media. You can check us out. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Even that's all at Comics Reviews. You can check us out, comicsreviews.com. Where I may or may not be uploading a spoiler-free or spoiler-filled review of Wonder Woman, I can't tell anymore because...
Do whatever you want.
Yeah, this review is driving me nuts. But, yeah, check us out on there. You could check me out at on Twitter at PetanataRob and Instagram at CallThisRational. And Dave, where can you be found? Is it Batman Petrucci on Twitter?
Yeah. On Twitter, it is that.
Yeah.
And on Instagram, it's unpronounceable symbol.
Yes, yes. Excellent.
And non-comics reviews and blah, 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 blah.
All that fun stuff. But, yeah, no, thanks to anyone tuning in. We appreciate it. And until next time.